from West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for the legislature today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University. Online at wvu.edu.
At the legislature today, education is once again debated on the Senate floor, but this time the education chair shares concerns over a bill he's sponsoring. In the House, delegates progress a right-to-work bill, one that makes changes to the current law being challenged in the state's court system. And advocates are pushing second chance laws that they say will help felons reintegrate into their communities. Those stories and more coming up on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Ashton Mara. Republican lawmakers released their budget framework earlier this week, announcing the state's higher education system would likely have to endure another $50 million budget cut in the 2018 fiscal year. That's on top of the years of cuts that state agencies have already been shouldering since the economic decline that largely began in 2013. Joining me tonight to discuss the budget and other policies moving through the State House that will affect the higher education system is Dr. Paul Hill. He's the chancellor of the state's Higher Education Policy Commission. Thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start with the budget and give us a little bit of context. If there's another $50 million cut this year, how much in the past 3 or 4 years has the higher education system already seen?
Well, we've already taken $57 million in reductions. That's out of beginning with about a $400 million budget. So it's a sizable reduction, approaching about 18% of what we had just a few years ago. So it's really had a huge impact on the institutions already. As I like to say, the belt has already been tightened.
Now, the Republican leadership hasn't released their specific plan yet. We don't know if individual schools will be cut, if there'll be an across-the-board cut. But what have we seen in the past? Have lawmakers cut across the board mostly?
We've had a combination of things. It has been primarily across-the-board cuts that have been required, but about 2 years ago, we had some very targeted cuts on some very specific programs. What then-Governor Tomlin's budget targeted some of the programs that had been added on by the legislature to the institutional line items over a number of years, and those were reduced significantly and basically forced to choose which one of those programs they wanted to keep. So we've had a combination of cuts to higher education.
So then if the system is cut again this year, what happens? What's the practical implication of that?
Well, we had a meeting just this week, just yesterday actually, with some of the leaders in the House about the budget, and I think, and all the presidents were there with me, and they were quite frank that it would have some very dire consequences, particularly to services to our students. President Gilbert reported yesterday that Marshall, for example, has already laid off 138 employees. Now, that reduces services to our students. Less time tutoring, less time for activities, less time that employees are paid to be on the campus providing those types of services to students. So it will affect our students, and then the awful thing is to make up the difference we're likely to see tuition increases to try to backfill at least some of that. And unfortunately, that falls on the back of students.
There has been some talk. It was presented during the special budget session last year, and those conversations kind of continued about closing some of the smaller colleges and universities in the state. Should lawmakers choose to do that? Should they choose to put a heavy burden on one university and cause it to close? What does that mean for West Virginia?
I think that has some very difficult consequences for that region of the state. it really cuts off access. We're talking access of students to get post-secondary education. Not every student can travel. Not every student can pick up their lives and move to a college campus, particularly if they are beyond high school age, like many of the community college students cannot do that. They have dependent families. Some of them are working two jobs. And so, you know, like Bluefield State, for example, we see a large number of commuter students who come from McDowell County, one of the poorest counties in the nation, and that is the only access they're going to have. They're certainly not going to be able to move. So the discussions, as I like to say, shouldn't be about the do we have excess capacity. It's whether or not we're going to provide services to those who need them most.
Chancellor, I want to ask you about one bill that was approved by the Senate earlier this week, House Bill 2542, mm-hmm. that grants more flexibility to universities in terms of personnel, hiring, firing, those kinds of things. Do these universities need that flexibility?
I think the universities have a lot more flexibility than most people are aware of. We've been decentralizing higher education for years and years. All the fiduciary responsibilities, for example, are controlled by the local boards. I do understand, however, that the requirements in some of the personnel rules were difficult for them to work through, given the very difficult times we're in. And everybody understands the fact that reductions in budgets are causing some very difficult decisions about personnel. We've actually been conducting lots of work in the personnel area based on the bills that were passed previously. This is another modification of that language that actually expedites that process. They'll still be able to address a lot of the compensation categories that we've helped the institutions work out, but it will certainly, again, have some impact on how they go about those layoffs in the future if we have to do additional layoffs.
Chancellor Paul Hill with the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mara. Pleasure.
Members of the Senate, we're supposed to take up a bill today to repeal the Common Core Education Standards and replace them with math and English standards written some 20 years ago by California and Massachusetts. The bill, however, was pushed back for the second day in a row today after the chamber's education chair spoke against it. Senate Bill 524 would repeal Common Core Education Standards and replace them with Massachusetts English Standards from 2001 and California Math Standards from 1997. Common Core, however, was repealed by the West Virginia Board of Education in 2015. The board then took on a comprehensive review process, creating the West Virginia College and Career Ready Standards that are being taught in West Virginia classrooms today.
You have to have standards in school. This is what we said. You can't just go in and shotgun this thing and, hey, just teach whatever you want to today. It don't matter. Just get somewhere. That's the thing. We've got to have a standard. And all standards basically are pretty much the same.
Kenny Mann is the Senate's Education Committee chair. He's a sponsor of the repeal bill that was passed out of his committee Saturday without any real debate. But since, Mann says he's studied the state's current standards, the standards the bill would require, and the standards currently in place in other states. And what he's found is,
there's really not a difference in the math and English of the standards out there now than what we're using currently. I'm telling you, it's not in the standard, it's in the techniques of teaching.
During a floor speech in the chamber today, Mann declared Common Core dead in West Virginia. A funeral director outside of the State House, he presented the Senate president with a death certificate for Common Core. As a symbol, he says, that the standards the state currently has in place are not Common Core and do not need to be changed through legislation. Democratic Senator Bob Plymel is a former Senate Education Committee chair who says education standards should be left to individual states to write and adopt, but a state cannot simply go without standards at all.
I agree Common Core is dead, and it should have been dead. It shouldn't have been proposed, and I did not agree with it at the time. I don't agree with it now. I do agree that education lives by standards. They've had standards, academic standards, all the time that I can remember. Those standards are made by state people, and that's the way it should be.
The argument over repealing Common Core has persisted at the State House despite actions taken by the West Virginia Board of Education. Senate Bill 524 would supersede the board's decisions, though, and require the 20-year-old standards from two other states be implemented by the start of the 2017-2018 school year.
If it would go into play and everything worked out, our teachers would have about roughly a month or less to develop these standards and start teaching them by August. There's no way. There's no way that can happen.
Plimal says the state's current standards are not the problem with the education system, and lawmakers should be looking for ways to fix the real issues.
80% of the Common Core standards that they adopted were what the standards were before then. And I guarantee you 80% of what we have now were in Common Core. Standards are standards. It's back to how you apply those standards in your teaching methods. And that's where we've been wrong, because we've been trying to dictate from Charleston instead of emanate from the counties.
On the floor today, Senate Majority Leader Ryan Ferns moved to lay the bill over until tomorrow, the second time the motion was made in 2 days. Mann says that's because the bill needs more consideration and discussion before it's put to a final vote. But he says he realizes members of his party are in favor of the changes contained within the legislation.
There'll be some people that may not be happy with what I said today, and I understand that. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'm gonna stand by what I said. And for our public educators in West Virginia, our educators across our state and our students, I have to stand by what I said today.
Senate Bill 524 is scheduled to be on second reading in the chamber tomorrow, the amendment phase. Mann says, however, it's possible the bill will be sent to another committee, potentially finance or rules, which is chaired by Senate President Mitch Carmichael. Senators also debated an election bill on the floor today, one that deals with how the governor is required to fill vacancies in elected offices. The bill is the result of a 2016 resignation in the Senate, won by a former member who changed party affiliation to give Republicans a majority in the chamber. After the 2014 election, representation in the West Virginia Senate was split between political parties, 17 Republicans and 17 Democrats. One member, former Senator Daniel Hall, chose to switch his party affiliation from Democrat to Republican and give the GOP a majority in the chamber for the first time in more than 80 years. Today, the Senate has 12 Democratic members and 24 Republicans, and those members often disagree on policy issues like Senate Bill 255. The bill requires the governor to fill a vacated elected position with a person from the party the former official was a member of at the time of his or her resignation. That's what state law currently says after a 2016 Supreme Court decision in the Daniel Hall case. Democratic Senator Corey Palumbo, however, says West Virginia would be the only state to codify such a provision, and he moved to amend the bill so that vacancies would have to be filled by people from the same party at the time of a person's election. He pointed to the potential for corruption.
The governor could tell me he wants me to become a Republican, and if I do, he's going to give me a cabinet secretary post with a $100,000 job, and then I can do that. I mean, there's all kinds of corrupt and unusual situations that we would not want to occur.
His fellow Democratic Senator Mike Romano joined him in supporting the amendment.
But why would we want to give somebody the opportunity to change parties right before they resign in order to get a political favor for themselves? Why would we want to give somebody the opportunity to change parties right before they resign to upset the balance in the legislature? And that can go in either direction. What we have here is a chance to apply some good old-fashioned common sense that when you're elected from a party, that's where your replacement comes from.
The Senate's Judiciary Chair, Charles Trump, disagreed. He says the law should stay the same and stick to the Supreme Court decision.
The people elect a person. They don't elect a party. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of that. Whether we're talking about Daniel Hall or any current member of this body, those of you who are elected, and some of you have been reelected to this body multiple times, are much more than the member of a single political party. You know, you're a person who lives in a community, who represents people, who's available to answer their questions and concerns, to introduce legislation. And so to say the only criterion is about political party is incorrect. We have to presume, Mr. President, when a delegate or a senator takes an action in one of the legislative chambers, whether it's introduction of a bill or a vote upon a resolution or a bill, or the registration or adherence to a political party. It's an action that he or she is taking in the interests of his or her constituents.
Palumbo, however, argued on behalf of changing the bill once again. He says the will of the voters should be protected.
There's no problem you can invite by saying if someone changes parties and resigns, we're going to fill that spot with how they were elected. I mean, I understand we do elect people. We don't elect parties necessarily, but people care about your party. I mean, I'd like to see anyone run on the ballot as a communist. You may be the best person in the world. You're not going to get elected. People care about your party.
Palumbo's amendment failed in the chamber, and the bill will be up for a vote tomorrow. A bill that sparked some debate in the Senate has made its way to the House of Delegates. It would make changes to the West Virginia Workplace Freedom Act, or the state's right to work law. Liz McCormick reports.
The debate over whether West Virginia should be the 26th right to work state began during the 2016 legislative session. Right to work laws make it illegal to require a worker in a union shop to pay union dues and fees if he or she is not a member. Unions argue that worker, however, is still benefiting from the contract negotiations the union pays for without contributing to the cost. Last year's right-to-work bill brought on heated debates in both chambers, but ultimately passed. The legislation was vetoed by then-Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, but both the House and Senate overrode the veto, and the bill became law. Right-to-work was challenged in court by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the state's largest workers' union. Last month, the Kanawha County judge deemed the right-to-work bill unconstitutional, and the decision could end up in the state Supreme Court. Senate Bill 330, which was on third reading in the House today, seeks to clean up the language the judge saw as unconstitutional. Delegate Scott Brewer, a Democrat from Mason County and a former construction worker, spoke in opposition to the bill.
Why does this body want to jeopardize the ability of our industry partners, private business, to shake hands with private organizations and enter into an agreement that provides everything we need for these industries? Senate Bill 330 simply requires unions and labor organizations to spend their resources on people that won't pay. That's what this is about. Spend your resources on people that will not pay.
Brewer was the only member of the body to speak to the bill. However, the vote was close. It passed 52 to 48. Following the vote, Democratic Delegate Mike Caputo of Marion County, who works for the United Mine Workers of America and has been vocal about his opposition to right to work, moved to amend the title of the West Virginia Workplace Freedom Act.
My amendment, Mr. Speaker, changes the title of the bill to read, "The Right of Workers to Freeload Off of Unions." Because I believe that's what this bill does. If we're going to pass a bill, let's be honest and let's quit creating warm, fuzzy names to go home and say we did good things for people. This is not a warm, fuzzy bill. It changes the rights of workers to and allows them to freeload off of unions.
Caputo's amendment failed, however, and the bill now heads back to the Senate. Members of the House quickly approved 12 additional bills during their floor session today. One of those was House Bill 2522. It would enter West Virginia into an agreement with other states to allow nurses to practice across state lines without having to get multiple licenses. The compact includes both registered nurses and licensed practical nurses. Delegate Jordan Hill, a Republican from Nicholas County, works in the Human Resources Department for his local hospital, and he spoke in favor of the bill.
I often find myself hiring numerous travel nurses at our local hospital monthly to fill vacancies that we cannot fill with West Virginia nurses because of our shortage in the Mountain State. The current system of duplicative licensure and nurses practicing in multiple states, and it's cumbersome and redundant for both nurses and states. We have an opportunity right now to step up to the plate and improve healthcare in rural West Virginia and across the state.
In the House's Judiciary Committee, representatives of licensed practical nurses expressed concerns over the Nurse Licensure Compact, arguing it wouldn't resolve the state's nursing shortage. It was instead pointed out that LPNs from out of state could come in and take jobs from West Virginians. Despite those raised concerns by lobbying interests, however, House Bill 2522 passed out of the chamber on a unanimous vote. For the legislature today, I'm Liz McCormick in the House.
West Virginia has just a few multi-member districts in the House. The 35th in Kanawha County is one of them. We meet its four representatives tonight in this edition of Meet Your Lawmakers.
Andrew Byrd is a Democrat from Kanawha County. Elected in 2014, he represents the state's 35th House of Delegates district. Byrd is an attorney and a graduate of West Virginia University College of Law. Moore Capito is a Republican who also represents the state's 35th House District. Capito is a first-term delegate from Kanawha County. He is the son of current U.S. Senator Shelley Moore Capito and the grandson of former Governor Arch Moore. He's a graduate of the Washington and Lee School of Law and works in the oil and gas industry. Eric Nelson represents the state's 35th House of Delegates district as a Republican. Elected in 2010, he is from Kanawha County. Delegate Nelson chairs the House Finance Committee and works in financial services in Charleston. Charlotte Lane is a Republican from Kanawha County. She was elected in 2016 to represent the state's 35th House District, but has previously served in the chamber after winning election in 1978, 1984, and 1990. Lane has also served as a member of the West Virginia Public Service Commission and spent 8 years as a commissioner for the International Trade Commission under President George W. Bush.
Testimonies of drug addiction, recovery, jail sentences, and second chances were hand-delivered to House Speaker Tim Armstead today by constituents advocating for second chance legislation. Samantha Godby reports.
I've held on, and I've had my past thrown in my face time and time again. I've checked that mark, that yes box on the have you ever been convicted of a felony hundreds of times because I have had to apply for job after job after job.
Jamie Moffitt was convicted of operating a meth lab when she was 21 years old. Experiences like hers inspired the Ban the Box legislation, or House Bill 2380, that would prohibit employers from asking applicants for criminal history before the applicant has signed a waiver, been considered for a specific position, and has received an interview. House Bill 2380 is one of several bills being pushed by lobbying groups like American Friends Service Committee to help convicted felons rehabilitate back into their communities. The committee held a press conference at the Capitol today to shed light on the stories of people like Moffitt. Daryl Padgett was incarcerated for 20 years, and while in prison, he taught himself persuasive writing. He petitioned the judge on his case to release him so he could further his education with a bachelor's degree. Now he has a master's in criminal science and travels all over the nation advocating for second chance legislation and sharing his story.
Often, society is reluctant to open their arms to let us back in. It is difficult, even after a master's degree. And even outside of the master's degree, the knowledge that I have with criminal law, to be able to persuade a senior United States District Court judge to release me and reduce my sentence on three occasions, I can't get a job.
On average, it costs the state of West Virginia $26,000 per year to house just one inmate in a state prison, roughly $77 per day, according to the West Virginia Division of Corrections. Padgett says passing legislation to help offenders reintegrate into society will help reduce those costs.
I'm a returning citizen after having spent 20 years in federal prison. I was locked down in a cell, sentenced to 37 years for a gram of crack cocaine. And in that dark, cold cell, I decided to make changes in my behavior. I realized that if I didn't change my behavior, that I possibly would die in that cell.
Senate Bill 76 is another second chance bill presented to lawmakers. Known as the Second Chance for Employment Act, it would allow certain felonies to be expunged from people's records. It passed the Senate unanimously last year, but wasn't considered in the House. Delegate Mike Pushkin says he wants to ensure that doesn't happen again.
As we have a whole lot of people who have blemishes on their record, and we also have a lot of people who are getting better. And there's a lot of people in this room who are getting better. Now, people do what they're supposed to do. They deserve a second chance. And not just because they deserve it, because the state deserves it.
Crossover day, or the final day to approve bills in their originating chambers, is quickly approaching. Advocates say that's why they're pushing hard to get second chance bills out of committee and onto the chamber floor. For the legislature today, I'm Samantha Godby at the State House.
This has been the Legislature Today. I'm Ashton Mara. Thanks for joining us.
Support for the Legislature Today is provided by the following.
AARP West Virginia, your ally for real possibilities in the Mountain State. Online at aarp.org/WV. West Virginia University. Online at wvu.edu. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting.